And this is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending 17th of January. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 17th of January, which this week have been edited by Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas and Jean Gardner. Your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are Cathedral bears witness to another historical event, Eco Group slams recycling rates across county, and firm creates 50 jobs to ease bed blocking. So let's have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley.
Cathedral bears witness to another historic event. Winchester has seen many historic events over two millennia. Sunday saw another one. Winchester Cathedral witnessed its first female dean installed. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogre became the 38th Dean of Winchester at a packed service at 3 p.m. on Saturday and then took a service on Sunday. It was chance for her to start to meet the thousands of people every year who worship or visit the great church. She is the former Dean of Birmingham Cathedral, a position which she has held for the last 6 years. She pioneered engagement with parishes around the diocese and forged connections with a range of institutions and charities across the city, putting her in tune with the evangelical stance of the bishop, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin. The bishop said, "Catherine's focus and passion for mission makes her an ideal fit at a time when we are beginning to make Winchester a more mission-shaped diocese. I am delighted by her appointment. Catherine will enrich cathedral life with her many gifts, and I look forward to working closely with her." The new dean said, "I'm very honoured to have been appointed as the next Dean of Winchester. Cathedrals are wonderful places of prayer and mission, and people have prayed and sought inspiration in Winchester's magnificent Benedictine Foundation Cathedral for over 1,000 years. And with this article, we have three colour photographs. One especially shows the length of the nave with all the people in it for the installation of the dean.
Let's have the story behind this second headline, please, Noel.
Eco Group slams recycling rates across county. Winchester environmental campaigners have slammed Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council for their worsening recycling rates. Hampshire was once one of the best councils in the country for recycling, and the website says that 157,000 tonnes of recyclables from the county are processed every year. However, government figures show the county is way down in the UK recycling league table, and according to the council's website, only recycles 41% of its waste. James Miller, chairman of the Waste Action Group, part of Winchester Action on Climate Change, or WINAC, said Winchester was also getting worse. Mr. Miller said, "Winchester has a great deal to be proud of. Its unrivaled history, great sense of community, excellent schools, the list goes on. That's why it came as a great shock when I heard that one thing we certainly can't be proud of is the manner in which we manage our waste. In 2015, recycled a meagre 35%. We're in the bottom 20% of councils in England. You may be wondering if it really matters that much. The truth is that it matters a great deal. Waste is one of the most significant contributors to climate change, contributing a similar amount of carbon as aviation." He added, "Many councils across the UK have been recycling more types of waste for years now. Hampshire never evolved, offering the same recycling service as it did 20 years ago. So, while many councils have been able to double or even triple recycling, we have achieved minimal gains. Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council urgently need to work together to bring about a revolution in recycling. Although budgets are already stretched, it has been proven that such schemes can often be profitable by rearranging existing services. In Department of the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, figures, the county does very badly. In the figures, Winchester is 278th out of 351 councils, although it is even worse in other parts of the county, with Southampton being 326th, Portsmouth 338th, and the New Forest 314th. The best English council was South Oxfordshire at 66% recycled. And this is accompanied by two pictures. One, a pile of rubbish on top of a landfill, and it looks totally disgusting, and there's a bulldozer on top of it shoving some of it even more into the pit. And then underneath there's a picture of cardboard going for recycling, lots and lots of stacks of cardboard all neatly tied up ready to go for recycling.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that one is, firm creates 50 jobs to ease bed blocking. A new scheme by a major care company and a Hampshire-based clinical commissioning group is aiming to tackle the issue of bed blocking and create up to 50 jobs at the same time. Bluebird Care and the NHS West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group have launched a new JET or JET service to solve the problem at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester and the Andover War Memorial Hospital. Both hospitals are experiencing major issues caused by people staying in hospital longer than is clinically needed when they don't have a support network at home. It is best known as bed blocking. The Bluebird Care JET service has been designed to help keep people out of hospital in the first instance by putting emergency care in place in the community where patients would otherwise be admitted to hospital. Bluebird Care and local healthcare professionals such as GPs and district nurses have joined together to deliver the same level of care in a patient's own home. The Winchester and Eastleigh GP surgeries involved include Friars Gate, St Paul's, St Clement's, Twyford and Stokewood in Bishopstoke. Owner and managing director of Bluebird Care, Norman Murphy, said, "We're thrilled to be the first to do this and anticipate that our new Bluebird Care JET service will be a huge success for the people of Winchester, Eastleigh and Andover. Not only will we provide instant care to elderly and vulnerable people in our local area, but we will provide the massive benefit of helping to relieve the bed blocking pressure that currently exists across the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester and the Andover War Memorial Hospital due to being at maximum capacity. The Bluebird Care JET service will reduce admissions for these hospitals, which will mean there are more free beds and staff on hand to help those that really need it, leaving us as the home care experts to look after those with less serious issues in their own home." Mr. Murphy added, "We believe our expertise and award-winning home care services make us the perfect partner to work alongside the NHS, and we look forward to this new partnership." Director at Mid-Hampshire Healthcare, Philip Hyden, said, "We're delighted to be working with Bluebird Care, who will be providing vital assistance to our NHS hospitals and GP surgeries." Mr. Hyden added, "It has long been known that with correct community social care support, thousands of people that are unnecessarily admitted to our hospital can be cared for just as well, if not better, in their own homes, and Bluebird Care were the perfect partner to deliver this." And there is a photograph of some of the team of the Bluebird Care wearing blue uniforms and all five people smiling broadly and anticipating being able to really help people rather than throwing them straight into hospital.
And that concludes the headline stories. We're going to continue with Death Notices, then Christian Comment, followed by Letters to the Editor, Your Say, Historical Items, Belgarum Diary, First Person and Editorial Comment. And I'll start with the death notices. Bardwell, John Edward Bardwell, suddenly aged 83. Bliss, Irene Bliss, at the Royal County Hospital, Winchester, aged 87. Carter, Nora Nay Cooper Carter, aged 88. Chamberlain MacDonald, Thomas Somerled Chamberlain MacDonald, aged 47. Farrer, Alice formerly Geoffrey nay Flux Farrer, peacefully aged 93. Garnett, Margaret Garnett, peacefully aged 93. Gilmore, Nellie Mae Gilmore, in West Home Nursing Home, aged 105. Graves, Colin Graves, peacefully at home, aged 71. Herridge, George Herridge, aged 79. Ivkovic, Radmilo Rod Ivkovic, peacefully aged 87. Marshall, Margaret Marshall. Miller, Christine Marion Miller, peacefully at home, aged 79. Reynolds, Jennifer Laley Reynolds, peacefully aged 68. Smith, Janice Nay Holloway Smith, aged 86. Sprunt, Alan Sprunt, peacefully. Stainer, Peggy Stainer. And finally, Young, Peter Young, peacefully aged 88. And now we go on to Christian comment, read by Shirley.
Yes, and it's headed, Living Faithfully in Unsettled Times. Over lunch at church, we discussed one of my favourite topics, St. Benedict. It seemed entirely appropriate to be discussing his rule, adopted and adapted by so many religious orders, over a meal, as his concerns include food and dining arrangements. However, his real insight is balance. Benedict wrote his rule in the 500s, when previously solitary hermits started to live in communities and had to balance the life of prayer with community and wider concerns. When a monk or nun joins a Benedictine abbey, they have to make three promises. Firstly, stability, being committed to both a place and a community. Secondly, conversion, being open to God, calling them into something new. And lastly, obedience, listening not just to the abbot, but also the scriptures, Holy Spirit, and community. At one level, this can appear contradictory. How can we be both stable and open to change? But at a deeper level, this embraces the tension within life, which can be so creative. Balance is shown throughout his rule, be it balancing both prayer and work, moderation in food, or the tension between the communal and the personal. In all of this, the community member is called to intuitive obedience to God by listening with the ear of your heart. Balance or harmony is vitally important. Benedict stipulated that Psalm 95, the Venite, would be used every morning. In saying it, we hear, "Harden not your hearts." The ear of our heart must always remain open, our souls always receptive. The abbey must have an open spirit, one that receives the guest as it receives Christ, and recognizes him primarily in the poor or pilgrim, or open to the insights of the newest member, as the Lord often reveals his own will to the youngest. How dynamic our churches would be if the new visitor was recognized as having insights equal to the longest serving member. What really emerged over our lunchtime discussion was the balance and tension between our inherited tradition, stability, and the need to engage with a changing society, conversion. It is a tension which we experience in much of the church's life. From the latest bishop's document on sexuality in the light of civil partnerships and equal marriage, to the desire for our services to be a place of comfort and familiarity in an ever-changing world. It can be painful when what has nurtured us has limited engagement with contemporary experiences, or people's deepest feelings of love and support remain unblessed because they do not follow our inherited heterosexual tradition. Jesus went to the traditional stable places of worship, synagogue and temple, but also looked to convert when he kicked over the money changers' tables or challenged the Pharisees. Those who follow him today seek to live faithfully in unsettled times, faithful to both our inherited scriptures and tradition, as well as our contemporary community's insights. The Spirit, who leads us into all truth, breathes through all of these. And that was written by the Reverend Paul Kennedy, Rector of East Winchester and priest in charge at St. Cross and Area Dean of Winchester.
Now we're going to continue with letters to the editor. Now, if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Now, there are 12 letters this week. We'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, the first one is from R. Harrison, and it's headlined Improving Estate. Sir, I feel I must leap to the defence of fellow tenants of Trussell Crescent in reply to Councillor Eileen Berry's remarks that it is a dreadful place to live, Chronicle, February the 9th. This, I agree, was true in the past. Now that has changed, and we have nice people living here with young families. However, for too long we have been the forgotten estate for improvements. All we read is Winnall, Highcliffe and Stanmore getting large amounts of money spent on them. When questioned, you are told you are next. Yes, we are now getting improvements done and have been promised a public consultation on parking restrictions at the rear. R. Harrison, Trussell Crescent, Week.
And the next letter is from Councillor Eileen Berry, mentioned in the last letter, but about a different subject, airing all views. Sir, regarding the article in the Chronicle on January the 26th on a new venue for all the arts, I think it is only fair to say that only one part of a conversation I had was reported. Whilst I think it is very good that my comments have sparked debate and ideas which could enhance the Theatre Royal, that is okay, that is healthy, and I make no apologies. What was not said was that I wish the Theatre Royal to continue as it is and continue to do what it is doing, only better. What I'm talking about is a new venue that is large enough to take concerts, ballet, opera and all the artistic festivals. Also make that building able to take dance, drama and all kinds of artistic teaching. It should be able to accommodate all artistic festivals, because Winchester is becoming increasingly popular, but we have no really large permanent venue. Yes, you could have areas that could also display artistic work, and also a restaurant, cafe. Had the entirety of the conversation been reported, you would not be worrying about the Theatre Royal being moved. It is not a question of moving the Theatre Royal, it was a question whether the theatre wanted to be part of a new regime. What they're doing is very commendable, and should they not want to be involved with any venture other than the Theatre Royal, then that's fine. I do not envisage this happening in the near future. I hope that it can, but I have my doubts. Another point I would like to make is that other people have spoken about the Brooks. That could be a fantastic venue. It has all the earmarks for coaches and cars, drop-off points. It is worth airing these ideas. I can understand why some people are protective. That means they will do all they can to make the Theatre Royal sustain itself. And already I hear people talking about incorporating another 40 to 50 seats. And that was from Councillor Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road, Pairstock.
And this one from Christopher Gordon is headed The Sardine Can. Sir Nick Ray, in the letters February 9th, asked for alternative name suggestions for Winchester railway stations, Execrable, Tinney, New Car Park. How about the Sardine Can? That's what the empty upper deck resembles. Furthermore, and typically, the key for opening it went missing. The prospect of public protest at the inauguration ceremony was enough to make South West Trains cancel, while our MP, who was supposed to be cutting the ribbon, found that parliamentary business in London prevented him from attending. Sardines come in bottled form too. And that was from Christopher Gordon, Corns Close, Winchester.
And this is a thank you letter from Shirley Webb. Sir, I write with a heartfelt thank you to the paramedics who were called to attend my husband, Gordon Howard Webb's collapse with a suspected heart attack, who arrived within 4 minutes. They were efficient, calming, comforting. Together with the hospital A&E staff, the care was second to none. On his discharge a few days later, I unfortunately collapsed very ill, and back they came again at the community nursing sister's request. I received the same high standard of care and efficiency, being equally urgent to get me to hospital. The A&E staff, Anna and the colleagues, could not do enough to help. Nothing was too much trouble, as I was very ill and frightened at leaving my invalid husband, for whom I am the sole carer. With the help of my wonderful stepson, Paul, through our GP and community sister, backup care at home was arranged for 3 times a day from a company called Bluebird Jet Service. These staff are amazing, and with the help of our wonderful friends, we've been able to recover at home. The moral of the story is that with the best efficient staff, ambulance crew, hospital staff, GP, community nursing sister, Bluebird Jet Service helping in an extremely frightening situation, my husband and I could not have coped. So God bless you all. You all do an amazing job, and people forget that you have to have your own family problems to sort out, and yet here you are doing such an amazing job to help others. May a helping hand always be extended to you all. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Shirley Webb, Boyne Rise, Winchester.
And Richard Gibson writes, information angst. Sir, I thought that companies using the word king in commercial venture need to get Cabinet Office approval. Carla Holmes Housing Development in Winchester has recently offered houses for sale under the name Kings Barton. Did Carla Holmes have to seek approval for this name? And if so, have they sought it from the Cabinet Office? The Cabinet Office's first response was this. Whilst we appreciate the information you have given us, I'm afraid it's not our policy to discuss applications made with parties not connected to the business. As a response, I made my request a Freedom of Information request, which then resulted in an email containing the following response. We neither confirm nor deny whether we hold information you have requested under Section 37(1)(b), which relates to the conferring by the Crown or any honour or dignity. As use of protected royal names, of which King is one, is a special distinction permitted by the Queen on the advice of her ministers, this exemption applies to your request. The duty in Section 1(1)(a) of the Act does not apply by virtue of Section 37(2) of the Act. This should not be taken as an indication that the information you requested is or is not held by the Department. Section 37(1)(b) is a qualified exemption, and we have considered the public interest in providing a neither confirm nor deny response. The Department recognises that there may be a public interest in confirming whether or not the Department holds or does not hold any correspondence on this subject. However, the Department considers that confirming whether or not we hold the requested information would in itself disclose information that would otherwise be exempt under Section 37(1)(b), subject to a public interest test. If a confirmation or denial was given under the Act, this would reveal that information relating to the development in question does or does not exist. Confirming or denying that information is held could enable an inference to be drawn about the Department's involvement or non-involvement in the naming of the development. We have determined that in all circumstances of the case, the public interest in maintaining the exclusion of the duty to confirm or deny outweighs the public interest in confirming or denying whether we hold the information in question. I find it bizarre that such an innocuous request cannot be answered. In fact, they cannot even confirm or deny that they have the information. Oh, so much for freedom of information. And that was from Richard Gibson, North Walls, Winchester.
And this letter by David Ellis is headed Retain Building. Sir, this is a belated response to Kate McIntosh's letter, Chronicle, February the 2nd, about the future of the former registrar's office on Station Hill. Since this building stands across the road from the station's main exit, I suggest that it should be refurbished as quickly as possible to house a Welcome to Winchester service for incoming rail travellers. Sneeze. Service for incoming rail passengers and the bus passengers who also alight there. Day trippers, tourists, shoppers, business people, students, and all those arriving to use the facilities available in and around the city. At the moment, as Kate rightly said, it is a sorry spectacle for our many visitors' first view of the city. Instead, it could be smartened up to supplement the Tourist Information Centre, Visit Winchester, and the BID, offering information and advice about what to do, what to see, which organisation to talk to about particular issues, where to eat and drink, where to stay, and how to get to all those places. But regardless of whether this proposal is taken up, this attractively designed building deserves to be safeguarded in some form so that it can be retained within the redevelopment of the station area. And that was from David Ellis, Gordon Road, Winchester.
James Anderson says air quality is great. Sir, thanks to government programmes, air pollution in the UK and its associated health effect have been in decline for many years, reducing by about 2.5% annually. Some elements of pollution do not cause health problems despite statistical association. Nitrogen dioxide is an example, contrary to Mr. Gillam's incorrect belief that association is proof of guilt, Chronicle, February the 9th. Indeed, nitrogen dioxide levels in Winchester would need to be hundreds of times higher than current levels before a person noticed even the slightest tickle in the throat. There is a widespread concern about fine particles of under 2.5 microns, PM2.5 in the jargon. This is a catch-all for thousands of substances from both natural and man-made sources that are floating in the atmosphere. Sea spray is a substantial source. At least part of the risk is from the small size of the particles, regardless of the substance. Fine particle pollution has reduced more than most other pollutants and is now one quarter of 1970 levels. Just 13% of it comes from road transport, say DEFRA. Regrettably, both Peter Rees and Christopher Gillam confabulate statistics for air pollution as though it were all down to the 1/8 element from vehicles. Fine particle pollution is a regional phenomenon that changes with the weather and distance from Dover. The 2016 average in Winchester of 10 micrograms per cubic metre is lower than car-restricted Oxford and about the same as Manchester, Portsmouth and car-restricted York. You have to get far from Dover to Glasgow or Plymouth for lower levels and to Anglesey to get below 7 micrograms. Banning traffic from the city centre will have little effect on fine particle pollution. We know from records of coal traffic on the Itchen navigation and depiction of the smoking chimneys of Winchester in 1827 that air quality in Winchester is the best it has been for 200 years and continues to improve. It won't suit the eco-campaigners, but the current fuss around air quality is fake news, shouting down good news. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wolston.
And Daphne E. Smith writes, no police presence. Sir, when I came to live in Cheriton at the end of World War II, I didn't intend to stay for long, for I had planned to change jobs from time to time and work my way round the country. However, within 2 months of my arrival, I met the man I would eventually marry. He was laid to rest 8 years ago in the peaceful churchyard after our 60 years together. This leads me to start this letter on a sour note. A dedicated team of volunteers tend the churchyard, keep the grass cut and plant flowers. Shortly after they had completed their last tidying up, session thieves had stolen the lawnmower and strimmer. We all hoped the villains would be found and brought to justice, but no luck so far. Years ago, many villages had a policeman living in the area. He was friendly and respected and knew most of the residents. Coming home from an evening out, it was quite usual to meet him as he was checking all was well, as he did his nightly round. Misbehaving youngsters received a good old telling off, and they knew he would have a word with their parents, and they would have another reprimand from them. This usually applied as a result of childish pranks and mischief. More serious matters would be booked, and offenders would find themselves in court. But this happened rarely in Cheriton, for I believe the very presence of a local bobby acted as a deterrent. We do have a neighbourhood watch system here, which is good, but there must be times when they need the backup of the police. I came here as a Lancashire lass, but feel accepted as a Cheritonian now and love the village enough to want to stay. And that was from Daphne E. Smith, The Pastures, Cheriton.
And Chris Higgins writes, walking in history. Sir, last week you published a series of pages on wonderful Winchester, concluding on page 42 with an excellent article entitled Charting the City's Rich Heritage to demonstrate why Winchester is such a special place. It is why so many residents love the culture, the history, and the architecture of this ancient capital. As we go around the city centre, we are walking in the footsteps of those Roman, Saxon, and Norman leaders, followed by several great kings and bishops mentioned in James Wilde's article, who have each shaped this city over the centuries. If Winchester is to flourish in the 21st century and beyond, it needs investment and growth, but each new development must be well planned to respect the heritage mentioned above. That is why there has been such opposition to the proposed overdevelopment of Silver Hill and the station area, which have been driven purely on commercial criteria with no regard for our culture and heritage. Similarly, so many people are horrified at the irresponsible development of the ugly station car park built by Network Rail without planning consent and in contravention of normal safety standards, with no regard for the environment of our wonderful city. But there are reasons to be optimistic for the town centre. The appointment of a well-respected planning consultant, JTP, to prepare an SPT, supplementary planning document for Silver Hill, brings hope that Winchester City Council may at last be recognising the need for proper framework planning, but hopefully not just for that limited area, as your previous correspondent Martin Willey wrote, letters February 9th. It needs to be extended to create a vision for the whole city. If we can also resolve an intelligent solution to the traffic management, then I look forward to seeing some well-considered proposals for Silver Hill, Station Approach and Bar End, which balance the commercial and cultural issues to allow us to move forward constructively with the best of 21st century architecture to complement our rich heritage. Let's get it right next time. Chris Higgins, Edgar Villas, Winchester.
Adam Nicholas says the mill could be commercially viable. Sir, Read the article, City Mill Needs to Raise £125,000, Chronicle February the 2nd. The increasing popularity of artisan bakers seems to have passed the National Trust by. They should have been building relationships with farmers and bakers who prefer their wheat milled in small batches at watermills because of the consistency of the power source. Surely this is the way forward to preserving the mill. It could be an important part of the fabric of the city if it was commercially viable. Visitors want something a bit more interesting than a bag of flour and some cute photos of otters. Otherwise, the National Trust will be back for more money, bolting horses and closing gates. Adam Nicholas, Paintersfield, St. Cross, Winchester. And this is accompanied by a delightful picture of some Winnell Primary School pupils wearing green National Trust aprons, and the city mayor, Jane Rutter, looking particularly glamorous in her red robes. And they're all holding up, obviously, a piece of bread which is baked in the shape of a letter, and the letters spell out, "Save Our Mill."
And Mark Rowe writes, "Sporting successes. Sir, tonight I attended the Winchester Sports Award. A fantastic evening, and all the winners were inspiring people and teams. It was moving to see one of my former teachers and his wife, Mr. and Mrs. Stanbrook, win an award for Old Orsford Cricket Club. The evening was fantastic. A big thank you to all who put the awards together and the sponsors, plus those hosted the awards." That was from Mark Rowe, Whale Street, Winchester.
And I'm afraid that that was the last letter to the editor for this week.
Oh.
No, in fact, we have one more letter, so it's over to you, Shirley.
Yes. This one is headed Brexit Concern. Lewis North has written this. Sir, whatever the prevailing policy of the government of the day, we all want to advance our country's success. However, this government's grand unveiling of their half-baked plan for Brexit last week is not best for Winchester. The British people also made a decision in the 1975 referendum, and by a far larger majority then, to remain. With the narrow majority last June, it is clear that there is no settled will of the British people as to how we associate with our European neighbours and our largest export market. Given the losers of the 1975 referendum did not stop trying to reverse that decision, why should Remainers be asked to do so now? There is no finality in any democracy. When a political party loses an election, the opposition does not stop arguing for what it believes in. British citizens currently enjoy the freedom to travel to, study in, work in, and export to the other 27 EU member states. Why should many who have enjoyed these EU benefits over the past 40 years deprive future generations of those very same opportunities? It is quite possible that in 20 years, today's youth will be in power in Westminster and will seek to ensure our country is prospering and confidently leading in Europe rather than retreating from it. Concerned readers may wish to write to their MPs to express their opposition to the invocation of Article 50, or to press for the people to have a vote on the actual departure terms the government negotiates. Hard-working readers deserve the right to know exactly what Brexit means and have a chance to confirm whether or not they are happy the government has achieved a better deal with the EU than what we enjoy now. And that was from Lewis North, Orsford Road, Cheriton.
And that was the last letter for the editor this week. I'm sorry for that, folks. And thanks to all of our contributors. And now it's time for Your Say. A survey by the Police Federation found that 1 in 4 police officers want all police to carry guns. We asked readers if the police should be armed. Noel's got the answers.
Yes, I've got answers from 4 different people. Andrew Homan, 59, business consultant of Stockbridge Road, Winchester, said, It depends on the threat level. In the East End of London, it might be necessary, but in sunny Winchester, I'm not so sure it is. And Ernie Mears, 74, retired of Vale Road, Highcliffe, said, yes, they should have guns. They should be able to protect themselves and the public. I think it's right. And Harry Hood, 20, student of Epton Road, Winall, said, I disagree with it. I don't think they should carry guns. We've been so long without them. I don't think they need to have them now. I think it would make the streets more dangerous. And Paul Sheridan, ward, artist, he's 59, of Harwood Place, Kingsworthy, said, I don't agree with the police being armed generally, but I do agree with armed response units. I disagree that all police should carry tasers too. It mustn't become the go-to thing to do.
Now we're going to go back through the mist of time for historical items from the news files. And we'll start with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And 25 years ago was February the 14th, 1992. And there are two little items. First, Pro Hunt demo. More than 1,000 supporters of fox hunting descended on a Winchester for a meeting on Monday to denounce anti-hunting resolutions before Hampshire County Council and Parliament. The protest meeting at the Guildhall, organised by the Hampshire Council for Country Sports, was addressed by a panel of celebrity speakers. Rory Bruce Knight, Master of the Hunts in Shropshire, condemned Kevin McNamara MP's Wild Mammals Protection Bill, which has a second reading in Parliament today, Friday. Labour peer Baroness Anne Mallalieu said the bill was a travesty of animal welfare. All the speakers lambasted a motion which proposes a ban of all hare coursing, fox and deer hunting on County Council land. And the second little item is anti-M3 demo. A mass rally is planned for Sunday the 16th of February on Shawford Down, south of Winchester, for those who object to the government starting work on the M3 extension from Compton to Bar End. Jonathan Porritt will be the main speaker at the event at 11:30 a.m. It is intended to send a message to the government that the public deplore not only the wanton destruction of landscape, but also the contempt with which the government treats the legal processes, said a spokesman. The European Commission has stated that the UK government has failed properly to implement the European directive, which requires that a full environmental impact assessment to be done before consent is given.
Let's go back 50 years. Over to you, Shirley.
Right. 50 years ago, February 17th, 1967, caravan fire fears. Local authorities in Hampshire who give licences for caravan sites are to be invited to consult the County Fire Service and to have a fire officer inspect the proposals. The County Chief Fire Officer, Mr. Edward Ashill, said that caravan fires were occurring in Hampshire at a fairly high rate when compared with figures nationally. When we take into consideration that this sort of caravan dweller has an open coal fire or is connected up to a gas system for cooking devices, it is a very dangerous situation indeed. It is not appreciated by caravan dwellers that once a caravan does catch fire, it is all over inside a period of about 10 minutes. And the second part of this, headed Mortgagee Burden, Sir, how tired one is of socialist governments toting for cheap votes on the issue of council house rents. Do they deliberately ignore the hard economic facts of life under a Labour government? Councillor Spicer complains of the unfairness of charging the extra burden of interest rates to the housing revenue account. Well, who is to pay for the increase if not the council house tenants? Presumably, those of us who are not fortunate enough to have a council house will have to shoulder the burden, in addition to the recent rise in mortgage interest rates.
Good to know for 100 years ago.
Yes, two items from February the 17th, 1917. The first is headlined, Farmland Neglected. Sir, I have been farming for 50 years and never saw the land in such a state as at present. I can stand at my door and see 1,000 acres of good corn land and not a plough has been in it, or is likely to be. And if the military takes such men as the carters and shepherds from the land, there'll be double the land idle next year. I've already 4 sons in the army who should be on the land producing food. My farm is nearly 500 acres, and all the labour I have is 3 men. At the end of 2 months, 2 of my men out of the 3 are to be taken. As we are urged on all hands to produce more food, surely this is tying a man's legs and telling him to run. And the second item is headlined, War Loan Success. Winchester is to be congratulated on having done exceedingly well for its size in the manner of the war loan. No less a sum than £493,109 having been subscribed in new money in the course of the fortnight since the matter was pressed upon the public at a meeting convened by the mayor. Beyond this sum, the mayor has received information of at least a further £84,000 having been subscribed by Winchester residents through banks outside the city. A gratifying feature is the patriotic manner in which the small investors have come forward.
Finally, let's go over to Jane for 200 years ago.
And 200 years ago was February the 17th, 1817. Illegal still. A few days since, some officers of excise detected an illicit distillery at Dunbar's Close, Lawn Market, Edinburgh, and destroyed 1,000 gallons of wash, with a copper still of about 40 gallons contents, upper works, etc., 30 gallons low wines, 14 fermenting vessels, etc. The distillery was at full work when discovered, and is believed to have long employed a number of people in this illicit traffic. A few days previous, 2 other stills had been seized. Several horses and carts employed by the transmission of smuggled spirits were also seized. And secondly, noblesse oblige, or noblesse oblige. When last we had the pleasure of announcing to our readers the noble example shown by His Royal Highness, the Prince Regent, in relinquishing a very considerable portion of his income in aid of the present exigencies of this country, we expressed a confident hope that his laudable act would have a correspondent effect in other quarters. The Marquis of Camden has resigned the extraordinary profits accruing from his office as Teller of the Exchequer, which are said to have amounted to £24,000 per annum, reserving the usual salary of £2,500.
And it's back to the present again with Shirley, because she's got alternative news from Belgarum.
Yes, indeed, Belgarum. And it's headed, 2 singers miss out on a semi-final place. A former Peter Simmons student was one of 2 Hampshire singers that have missed out on a semi-final place on a BBC talent show. Former Simmons student Anthony Sahota of Bassett pictured left with show judge Gary Barlow and his mother Caroline. This is in the picture that we have with the article. And Ryan Butterworth, a former Brockenhurst College pupil, failed to make the semi-final of Let It Shine. In the final head-to-head, only 5 boys out of the 10 left would make the next step. But neither Anthony nor Ryan made it through. And as I say, there's a picture of them posing here for the photograph in colour. And then the next little item under Belgarum is headed London, Barcelona or Winchester. Winchester's maritime heritage of coal barges up the Itchen navigation ended in 1869. But that did not stop world sailing, considering Winchester as a potential location for its new base. Winchester was even in the shortlist with Southampton, London and Barcelona. However, world sailing plumped for central London rather than an office in Winchester, if they can find one. And the next section is headed Revamped Outdoor Area is Nearly Complete. The revamp which was more than 20 years in the making, is nearing its end. Planters have been installed on the new outdoor area by the Chasm Block on St George's Street. When finished, it will allow local eateries such as Tom's Deli, Rawberry and Mano Thai to have a license for outdoor seating. Critics, including Lib Dem city councillors, have branded it a pollution patio because of its proximity to the traffic at St George's Street. But the city council hopes in time the planters and the jasmine and ivy will block the fumes. And again, there's a very nice colour picture here of this new work on the patio.
First person this week is by George Hatem, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes, and his headline is Hunting a Gift for Your Woman. It's a challenge that has faced the male of our species almost since caveman days. How do I choose a present that my partner will adore? Most of us chaps are familiar with the sense of failure, which often follows the unwrapping of a gift to our beloved. She reacts not with ecstatic surprise and warm embrace, but with a cool thank you and a perfunctory peck on the cheek. What a letdown, after hours spent trying to think of something to show your love and devotion. Don't despair, fellas. I may have the answer. My method for pleasing the fair sex on occasions like birthdays and Christmas applies to most types of personality and to all ages, from girls to grandmas. A side benefit of my shopping method is that it keeps you fit. Instead of tying you to the internet or getting you stuck in crowds of shoppers, my high-speed approach boosts leg muscles. But it is restricted to clothes, which are well received by most people and by most women in particular. Books, gadgets and other unwearables are more risky. They're too much a matter of taste. And giving non-clothes does not provide the recipient with the fun of trying something on at the time of receipt. The difficulties in buying fashion items for women are daunting, as women themselves admit. They say it's hard enough to find clothes for themselves, let alone other people. So although I'm a man, I believe the advice I'm about to give could be useful even to some female shoppers. Now here comes the advice. It's very simple. You may not think much of it on first reading or first listening, but give it a chance. Only buy clothes that you have seen on a mannequin. What? That's it? Yes, that is the advice. But hang on, let me explain. The mannequins I'm talking about are those life-size dolls in shop windows and on the shop floor dressed in clothes for sale. They tell you instantly what a garment looks like without you having to work through long rows of hidden items hanging flat on hangers. That takes ages. Instead, spend just seconds checking out the mannequins in the shop window. Then skip inside and orbit the shop floor while scanning any mannequins there. None of the mannequins wearing anything good for your beloved? Don't waste any more time there. Stride to the next shop and do a similar sweep of windows and shop floor. Sooner or later, something right for your beloved will shine forth from a mannequin. Supplementary advice. Ask your partner for her height, dress and shoe size, etc. and keep that info in your wallet. Start with neutral colours. Giving leopard skin or pink chiffon is risky. Save that till you're confident. Know which shops are in your price range. Ask your partner where she shops. London's Oxford Street is too congested. Winchester has a good selection, but there are more mannequins at West Quay in Southampton. Consider hedging your bets. Ladies won't object to opening more than one present. A few caveats. Your lover may not be delighted with your first mannequin present, but once they've worn it a few times, they'll get used to the idea of a man who gives good stuff. Most mannequins are unrealistically slim, and I've learned that staff pin the clothes at the back, altering how they would look on a real person. So, no more looking at endless outfits on websites. Now your lover will be able to admire her man for his hunting in the shopping jungle. I admit that women often receive jewellery more eagerly than clothes, but diamonds and gold are beyond the scope of this article. They're also beyond my budget. I also think they are best reserved for important milestones. At least, that's what I keep telling my wife.
And now we've got the editorial comment, and it's going to be read by Jane.
And the editorial comment this week is, City must grow and evolve in the future. Councillor Ian Tait is to be applauded for raising the issue about house building in and around Winchester. For many years, members of Winchester City Council found it expedient to oppose the development of Barton Farm, even though only a moron in a hurry was unaware that the scheme would eventually have to be built. Councillor Tait was the only councillor with an active political career who publicly came out in favour of the 2,000-home scheme. Other voices were raised by those retiring, most kept quiet. But Councillor Tait has not stopped there. He continues to raise the issue and say that more houses are needed. The fact is that Winchester must continue to grow, as it has done for the last 150 years, spurred first by the arrival of the railway and latterly by the M3. It is no good residents already in their homes, usually built on green fields in the last 50 years, to say that's enough. No one is saying that another Barton Farm is needed this year or next, but sooner or later a major new development will have to take place, probably on the farmland the other side of Wellhouse Lane up to Three Maids Hill. The alternative will be a city that gets older and richer as the young and less affluent are forced out. No one should see that.
Now it's time for What's On. On Wednesday the 22nd of February, it's Snowdrop Open Day at the Down House in Hitchin Abbas. I think it starts at 10 a.m. and it goes through to 2 p.m. So it costs £5, and this is in aid of the Mayor's charities, and refreshments are available. On Saturday the 25th of February at 7 p.m, Joseph and his amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Enjoy a performance by the Cathedral Junior Choir and local school choirs. For tickets, please telephone 01962 857 275. And then on 28th of February again, at 4:45, earlier than the Joseph, at the Winchester College Recital Rooms, it's an informal concert. And I'm afraid I've got no more details about that. And at the Theatre Royal, until Saturday, the 25th of February, the Youth Theatre put on Oklahoma. And for information and tickets for that, 01962 840 440. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 17th of January at 8:04 a.m. and begins at 5:25 p.m. On Wednesday the 22nd of January, it ends at 7:04 a.m. and begins at 5:34 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you've got a problem with the recordings you receive from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. We'll continue with items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Shirley.
Right. This one is headed Garden Home Plans Delayed. Plans to build a home in a garden in the heart of Winchester have been delayed until a site visit can be carried out by city councillors. An application by John Piper for 17 North Walls involved the redesign of the building from a two-storey house to one with a combination of flat-roofed, single-storey sections. The application was reported to committee due to the number of objections it received. Among the objections were concerns that the property could worsen problems with flooding in the area and that it would result in overshadowing. John Brown of North Walls said, "It will have severe and adverse impact on various issues, including loss of view and sunlight from the back of our house. We would lose a lot of light to the kitchen. The children's bedrooms would become more dark and boxed in. Our garden already struggles for light. This will darken an already very dark garden, even impacting fruit trees, my workspace, and many aspects of our family life." Sharon Brown, also of North Walls, added that the application's flood risk assessment was grossly misleading and inaccurate. However, Agent Jeremy Tyrrell said the proposal was modest in size. The design and layout is simple and logical. This application proposal is a high-quality development, he said. Councillor Ian Tate said, on balance, my inclination is to support this application. However, at the moment, my view is I would propose we go and visit the site.
This is a very sad story, a tragedy of infant doctors sent home. Inquest hears of baby Owen's sudden deterioration. An infant died hours after being sent home from Winchester Hospital by doctors, an inquest heard. Owen Reed died of an unidentified bacterial infection which developed into sepsis, Winchester Coroner's Court was told. The 13-month-old was discharged from A&E hours before, but the court heard that the infection was not apparent at that time. Owen of Grange Road, Aldsford, was admitted to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on December the 11th, 2015, where he was treated for a suspected viral infection. He returned to the hospital in Winchester hours later and went into shock. Owen was transferred to Southampton General Hospital, but later died on December the 12th. His mother, Naomi Bennett, said the family had been shopping prior to him becoming ill. He was a little bit tired towards the end, but not unusually, she said. Then he started to get really hot and just was not himself. Dr. Oliver Bevington, who treated Owen at his first visit to the RHCH, said nothing initially suggested sepsis. When asked by Central Hampshire coroner Graham Short if Owen's discharge from hospital was related to the lack of hospital beds, he said that although the ward was full, if he had felt the need to admit Owen, he would have done so, even if this involved a transfer to another hospital. Owen was taken to hospital a second time in the afternoon, about 8 hours later, by medical technician Robert Whittaker, as there were no ambulances available quickly enough. Dr. Ian Rodd of RHCH said Owen was clearly exceptionally unwell upon arriving at hospital a second time. He added that improvements have been made since Owen's death, including implementing the sepsis screening tool, which was being trialled at the time of his death, as well as revisions to paediatric early warning systems charts. When asked by Mr. Short if the sepsis screening tool would have made a difference, Dr. Rodd said he did not believe so, as at the time of his discharge, Owen would have only fulfilled one of the three criteria on the screening. Mr. Short delivered a narrative conclusion. I do understand that in cases like this, a child of that age that you have seen grow and prosper and learn to love can never be replaced, he said. The evidence shows that there was a missed opportunity to identify that Owen may have been a high risk of susceptibility to infection. But his presentation at that time and the history given was entirely consistent with a diagnosis of an upper respiratory tract infection. That missed opportunity is with the benefit of hindsight. He recorded a conclusion of death from an unidentified bacterial infection, which was not apparent when Owen was seen, but was likely to have been developing into sepsis. In a statement, Owen's family said, "We are pleased to hear that following Owen's tragic death, the Trust have implemented policies to try and ensure other parents don't go through the devastation that we've had to endure. Owen was a happy, lively toddler, and his life was sadly cut short. We hope lessons have been learned. We will miss Owen for the rest of our lives." A University Hospital Southampton spokesman said, "The UHS involvement in this case was minimal, and known concerns were raised by the coroner about the treatment and care provided in Southampton."
And here we have Wildlife Habitat Appeal Delight. A wildlife trust has been blown away by the response to an appeal to save a vital habitat near Twyford. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, HIWWT, are aiming to buy Hockley Meadows Farm in Twyford, which they say is vital for species like water vole, otter, and the rare southern damselfly. The site, which is in the heart of the Itchen Valley, has been put up for sale by the farmer who owns it, as he is retiring. HIWWT want to ensure that the land is protected from future development or intensive farming, and the owner has offered to sell the farm to the trust at the market value of £400,000 instead of putting it onto the open market. They say that they need £200,000 to secure the farm, and already they have reached nearly three quarters of that target and have had £142,000 pour in. But they still need £58,000, which must be found by February the 24th, and have now issued a rallying call for supporters to help them reach their final target. Chief Executive at Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, Debbie Tan, said, "We've been blown away by the generosity of our supporters. Every little helps, whether it's £5 or £500, to help us secure this land for wildlife." The huge response, not just from our members, but the local Twyford community, parish council, and even supporters from overseas, just goes to show how important protecting our iconic landscapes and species is to so many people. HIWWT plan to use the land to recreate the traditional wildlife-friendly farming methods that have shaped the Itchen Valley's water meadows. As well as running a working wildlife-friendly farm, they'll manage the surrounding floodplain meadows as a vital habitat for fantastic species like water vole, otter, and the rare southern damselfly. To support the appeal and for more information, visit www.hiwwt.org.uk/Hockley-appeal. And this is accompanied by two pictures. One, a photograph of the 31-acre Hockley Meadows as it is now, and another, which is an artist's impression of how this could look if it were taken over. And it's a beautiful little watercolour featuring sheep on the land in the background, and in the foreground there's an assortment of beautiful wildlife flowers. They've got yellow iris and daffodils and pink phlox and pink flowering thistles and swallows flying over and an owl and what I believe is a damselfly just landing down.
And this one is headed Anglo-Saxon Museum Plans. Plans for an Anglo-Saxon museum on the move in Winchester have been put to city councillors. In a presentation to the Central Winchester Regeneration Informal Policy Group, representatives from the Hampshire Cultural Trust outlined their vision for a national Anglo-Saxon museum. Alan Lovell, chairman of the Hampshire Cultural Trust, said, "This feels to me like an open goal and a wonderful opportunity. I am optimistic it can be done, but it's early days. What it needs is everyone working together in a good project team to make it happen." In his appeal, Mr. Lovell said a museum should focus on the period from 870 to 1170, which covers the reign of King Alfred the Great to the death of Henry of Blois. He added that he wanted to model the museum on the Jorvik Viking Centre in York, which welcomed its 18 millionth visitor in 2015. A key part of the presentation was the idea of a museum on the move, with visitors walking through the city to sites including Hyde Abbey, the Cathedral, and the Great Hall, as well as visiting a purpose-built museum in the heart of the city. The initial ideas for the museum would also see the English project, which promotes understanding of the story of the English language, form part of the museum. Speaking about financing the museum, Mr. Lovell said the steering group had a budget of £1.1 million for preparatory work into the project over the next 3 years. Architect Chris Brandon of Perkins and Will said a design for a building was premature, but they laid out some concept ideas for the project. The backbone to England is the Anglo-Saxons, and we just don't celebrate it, he said. He emphasised the possibility of using technology, such as tablet devices, to allow guests to see recreated scenes from the past, as well as the possibility of a rooftop garden and viewing gallery with sight lines to key locations around the city. However, Deputy Leader Councillor Victoria Weston said the project was very much in the concept stages. The Council cannot endorse any particular proposal yet. I think at this stage of the process, as a group here, we cannot even think about committing any land to this project, she said. Mr. Lovell also previously announced the Cultural Trust's ambitions for Winchester to become a World Heritage Site. Speaking at St. Bartholomew's Church before the King Alfred Lecture, part of Hyde 900's King Alfred Weekend in November, he said, "It should be a World Heritage Site, but the powers that be may think we already have too many walled Western cities." World Heritage Sites are designated by the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO. There are currently just 30 in the UK, including Stonehenge, the City of Bath, Canterbury Cathedral and the Jurassic Coast of Dorset and Devon. If the bid was successful, Winchester would also join the ranks of the world-famous Grand Canyon, Taj Mahal, and the Great Barrier Reef. To be included on the World Heritage List, sites must be of outstanding universal value and meet at least one out of 10 criteria. Criteria include representing a masterpiece of human creative genius, a major stage of the Earth's history, or an area of exceptional natural beauty.
England and Wales' most senior judge sits at Winchester Court. An historic first was held in Winchester this week. The Lord Chief Justice, Lord Thomas, sat at Winchester Law Courts on Tuesday. It was the first time that Winchester has hosted the most senior judge in England and Wales and the Court of Appeal, which is normally based at the High Court in the Strand, central London. Lord Thomas sat for the day in Court 2 with the two presiding judges of the Western Circuit, Mr. Justice Dingemans and Mrs. Justice May. Among the cases he heard was the appeal for Billy Midmore, who was convicted last year and jailed for 15 years for his role, along with his brother Geoffrey, in an acid attack on Carla Whitlock in Southampton city centre that left her scarred for life. Mr. Justice Thomas rejected the appeal against Midmore's conviction and also his appeal against the sentence. Midmore was not in court, but appeared via a video link from prison. The most senior judge, normally in Winchester, is Judge Keith Cutler, the Recorder of Winchester, who spoke of his delight before the arrival of Justice Thomas. Judge Cutler told the Chronicle, "I am very keen about the Lord Chief Justice coming down. It's a way of showing and recognising that places like Winchester are important legal centres." The visit to Winchester was an attempt to make the justice system less London-dominated, and the Court of Appeal has already sat in Liverpool and Bristol. Winchester and Bristol are the two major legal centres on the Western Circuit. Winchester's preeminence dates back to Anglo-Saxon times, when Alfred made it the capital of Wessex and a major legal centre.
And here we have Dragon's Den-style event sees groups pitch up in bid for cash. Thousands of pounds of council money will help voluntary and community groups in Winchester. In a Dragon's Den-style event, 9 out of 18 applicants who applied for funding pitched their ideas to Winchester City Council. A total of £15,000 was distributed to projects by the Panel of Dragons at Winchester City Council's first unique Funder's Den. The event was supported by Community First Winchester and co-funded by Tent on the Green and Winchester City Council. Winners on the evening included Kids, who provide a wide range of support services to disabled children, young people and their families. KIDS, that's K-I-D-S in capitals, pitched for funding to enable the training of young facilitators in the Winchester area. Councillor Steve Miller, portfolio holder for Estates and Community Grants, said local voluntary organisations were able to walk away with their grant award on the night. Organisations networked and learned about other group activities in our district. Winnovation is one of our many ways in which we award our grant monies throughout the year. City Council Funding and Development Officer Melissa Fletcher said, "This funding stream generated a lot of interest and is a unique and interactive way to award our grant monies. It was fantastic to see that people were genuinely pleased when their pitching efforts were rewarded." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the pitchers and seven winners all holding up very large copies of cheques for the amount that they have been awarded for their charity, and all smiling very broadly, as can be imagined.
Jobs boost as hotels to open. A major chain has announced that it is to create more than 200 jobs in Hampshire with the opening of seven new hotels, including one in Winchester. Travel Lodge says Hampshire is a key growth area for its business, and it plans to open hotels in Lymington, Winchester, Southsea, Gosport, Portsmouth, Hedgend and Fareham. Shalika Ahmed, Travel Lodge spokesperson, said, "As one of the UK's largest independent hotel brands, which operates 545 hotels, we are actively looking for a further 250 hotel sites across the country. The Hampshire economy is growing at pace, and with increasing visitor numbers to the area, there is still a shortage of good quality accommodation at a great value price. Therefore, to meet this growing consumer demand, we are looking for new hotel sites. This expansion could create around 200 new jobs and will be great news for the local economy, as our research shows that annually our customers will spend over £1 million with local businesses during their stay." Bryn Taylor, Regional Director for Travel Lodge, added, "Hampshire was a goldmine for growth." The announcement comes after Travel Lodge expanded into North Hampshire with its opening of its 545th hotel in Andover last month, creating more than 15 jobs and costing more than £4 million. The seven planned hotels will mean Travel Lodge will have 25 in the county. Maureen Frost, Deputy Chief Executive of Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, has welcomed the plans, saying it will be a significant economic bonus for Hampshire. She said, "Bringing a further 200 jobs to Hampshire is welcome news, and this announcement reflects the growing tourism and leisure economy in Hampshire, in particular the number of high-profile events that now take place on an annual basis, raising the county's profile as a place to visit. It shows confidence in Hampshire as a place to do business." The company, whose slogan is "That's Travel Logical," are currently investigating potential sites, with announcements on final locations expected in the spring.
Architects on shortlist for design contest. Former Winchester architects have been shortlisted for a competition to design a national Christian monument. Snug Architects, based in Totten and formerly on Andover Road, has won through to the final five of a contest that attracted 133 entries from 20 countries. Their ambitious plan is a simple twisting arch to be situated in the English countryside. Snug director Paul Bookley said the design is beautiful, simple and dynamic. He said, "Our entry seeks to create a place where believers can gather to pray. More than that, we have sought to create a living wall alive with the prayers of those who will visit the structure and those whose prayers are tweeted, triggering a multitude of lights that transform the wall into a physical embodiment of the life in the modern church. Mr. Barclay said, "The concept is for a wall made of 1 million bricks to form a powerful reminder of our unity, one in Christ, forming a single continuous surface without end. At the centre is space for many thousands to gather, and we believe become host to great gatherings of the faithful," said Mr. Barclay. The shortlisted designs were announced last week at an event at the House of Commons. Steve Brine, MP, who attended the launch, said, "Saying you want to build a wall these days can very easily be taken in the wrong way, which is why I am so thrilled to back this wholly positive project. The next step is for the wall team to secure a prominent site and develop its ideas, with the winner due to be announced in early 2018. And this is accompanied by an artist's impression of the wall, which looks like a long strip of brick, quite big because it's got pictures of people to give, you know, very small people. And it looks as if it's enclosing a field, but then the strip goes up in the air to make an arch. So I don't know quite what that means.
And now council sends teams to help out charity. When the call came that the chef at a Winchester charity that helps homeless and vulnerable people would be away, the city council answered in style. Five teams from the council, including councillors and officers, stepped up to the plate, literally, for the charity Trinity. Trinity provides services for the homeless, including free meals. Councillor Guy Ashton, portfolio holder for professional services, said, "I can think of few more useful ways for the council to build on its existing relationship with Trinity, and I am delighted that our corporate volunteering policy has created this kind of opportunity. I would challenge any commercial agency to devise a day which doesn't so much to build teams, exercise lateral thinking skills, and encourage an agile mindset." And this is accompanied by a beautiful, colourful photograph of course, the mayor, Jane Rutter, with her chain and this time a lovely red flowered apron. She often seems to be in red to match her wonderful red hair. And five other ladies in aprons. And they're all serving out food, which looks delicious. There's a big tray of shepherd's pie with a crusty topping to it and a large bowl of salad that they can help themselves to, plus some fruit and yogurt and custard and all sorts of other delicious dishes.
Jobs could transfer. Bosses at Next say that jobs at the Winchester store, which will be closing this year, could be saved. As reported, the store will be closing in June as its lease runs out. It comes after a plan to turn the top two floors of the building into luxury flats, which would involve some retail space being lost, was approved in December, amid concerns about turning the retail space into housing in Winchester. It is understood that the plans would affect 15 full-time staff, but Next say that they will aim to ensure that their jobs won't be affected by moving them to neighbouring stores. A spokeswoman for Next said, "Our intention is, and always has been, with the jobs from the store, to relocate staff into neighbouring stores, so we will be offering this to all staff."
I've got the Q&A column, My Winchester. Kevin Hutchins, 49, IT Solutions Architect of Dean Lane, Winchester, shares his favourite things about the city. "What's your favourite restaurant or cafe?" "Cafe Monde in the square. Great location, clean tables and a quick friendly service." "What's your favourite pub or bar?" "The Roebuck Inn. Versatile, well-managed and unpretentious." "What's your favourite shop?" "Form, the homeware shop in Parchment Street. My dog is always welcome and they wrap gifts beautifully." "What's your favourite building?" "I went to a concert in New Hall, Winchester College, and was very struck with the design. It's a rather rare example of strong 1960s architecture." "What's your favourite view?" "I walk my Welsh Terrier around the fields at the end of Salters Lane, So the view over Sparshot and Crawley, I love the way it changes with the seasons. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? The Hampshire Hog by the County Council offices and the Elizabeth Frink Horse and Rider. I'm not sure either can compete with King Alfred, though. What is Winchester's best kept secret? St. Thomas's Passage off Southgate Street with its well-maintained red phone box. And what is the best thing about Winchester? The sense of history one gets from wandering through the streets. And the worst? The feeling of danger when trying to cycle across town and the way people are forced to be so dependent on their cars. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? A network of safe cycle routes making bicycles truly attractive and practical. Describe Winchester in one sentence. A place where rivers, countryside, hills and history sit more or less comfortably alongside the M3 corridor.
And here we have drivers caught using phones in clampdown. More than 200 drivers were caught using their phones behind the wheel as part of a week-long crackdown by Hampshire Police. A total of 204 drivers were stopped by roads policing officers from the Joint Operations Unit recently as part of a nationwide initiative to make county roads safer for all their users. Drivers who were stopped by officers included a van driver on the M27 near Rownham's, who was stopped for the third time in as many weeks for using his phone behind the wheel. The man received a fixed penalty notice. Another driver was caught using his phone behind the van wheel to check if a court fine had gone through for previously using his phone behind the wheel. Road Safety Sergeant Rob Hurd said, "It is disappointing that still so many people are taking that risk to use their phones while driving. Many lives are being put at risk by the selfish actions of these people, and it is not acceptable." He added, "Please turn your phone off and put it out of reach so you won't be tempted. That moment of inattention really is the difference between life and death. It is not worth the risk." Of the 204 drivers stopped, 180 were handed fixed penalty notices, 166 were male, 132 were driving cars, and 61 were driving vans. Another 17 drivers were stopped last week for being distracted while driving.
This one is headed, "Driver Twice Defied Ban." A Winchester woman was nearly jailed for twice defying a driving ban. Susan Pope, 40, admitted driving a 54 Ridge Ford Focus while disqualified and with no insurance on the city's fire gate on Christmas Eve, the second such offence in a year. Pope of Froment Road, Wick, was sentenced to 10 weeks jail, but magistrates suspended the sentence for 12 months. She was ordered to do 180 hours unpaid work, pay a £115 victim surcharge, and be further disqualified for 6 months.
This is rather short notice. A festival returns. The Children of Winchester Festival is back for a second year. Cowfest offers free activities for children in an initiative coordinated by the Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust, that's SALT, Westgate School and the University of Winchester. Workshop providers and performers include Art Stars, Creative Palaver, the University of Winchester, Hub Youth Theatre, Moo Music, Winnell Rock School, Busy Lizzie, Firefly Theatre School and Integrate Dance. It will take place at the Tower at King School on February the 18th and the 19th. A performance showcase will close the festival on Sunday afternoon.
And now honours all round. Hospital staff from across Hampshire have been honoured with awards for the quality of their care. Almost 300 hospital staff attended the WOW Awards Gala ceremony, celebrating the dedication and care shown by staff across Hampshire. It was held at the Holiday Inn near Winchester. Winchester Hospital's Nick Mache and Hazel Horsnell jointly won the evening's top award. Midwife Hazel was nominated after ensuring that an anxious new mum was able to stay with her husband and baby. Orthopaedic and surgical site lead Nick received his award after going the extra mile to help an elderly couple. The couple had both been admitted, but they were unable to be placed on the same ward, causing a great deal of anxiety. Nick acted as a messenger between the two, passing on a number of notes, including one from the husband, which simply said, "I love you." Nick said, "When I visited the husband, I asked if there was anything I could do. He just said that he would like me to go and see his wife, check that she was all right, reassure her, and pass on a message of love. I went back and forth a couple of times, passing on messages. It felt like a small thing to do, but when I thought about it afterwards, I got quite choked up." He added, "I just wanted to put their minds at ease, and it was really nice to hear that they both did well afterwards." Elizabeth Padmore, chairman of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said, "I know many of you here tonight consider what you do to be all in a day's work and are modest about your achievements, but I encourage you to be very proud of your contribution." Guest speaker for the evening was Alex Lewis, who lost both of his arms, both of his legs, and part of his face after developing sepsis. He spoke warmly about the care he received at the RHCH and inspired the audience with his determination to return to near normal life as possible.
And that, I'm afraid, concludes the extract for the week ending 17th of January 2017. Excuse me. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please replace the correct address label on the wallet too and return it as soon as possible. I'm afraid there's no play-out music as there wasn't any play-in music. So thank you and goodbye again.